Hello, and welcome to Beating Around the Bush with Fleur Anderson, a chance to sit back, relax, and chat about business, culture, community, and technology in rural Australia. Beating Around the Bush is brought to you by the Rural Business Collective.
I'm sitting here with Matthew from Observant, and Matthew's just made a really interesting presentation to the crowd here at 400M today. And if you can give the listeners that haven't heard your talk a quick synopsis of what Observant does and where its place in the market is and how that has or hasn't changed since taking on your new partners.
Yeah, look, I mean, water is a critical component to almost all of agriculture, and our job is to precisely measure and precisely control water to allow a farmer, a producer, a grower to make the kind of decisions that will impact the profitability of their business. That can be helping them with the cost of labour, that can be improvements in yield, that can be more efficient management of a scarce resource, and water is a scarce resource. And this is achieved through technology that's deployed on the farm and then software that is accessible through the devices that are convenient to them to give them information and allow them to put those decisions quickly into action. In terms of how we're operating in Australia, really it's pretty much the same. The opportunity for us as part of Jane really is in looking at what we've done that's worked really well in Australia and working out how to replicate that success in all the other countries that we can now operate in.
You said you started your first business as a teenager, and you've been quite entrepreneurial there. Do you think that was something, you're saying it's a learnt skill, did you learn that in your childhood home, or do you think that it was something that you've picked up along the way, and how important has that childhood been in shaping your ability to go through?
Yeah, I did. I mean, my parents both were, always encouraged us to just pursue what we wanted to pursue, and my father in particular was entrepreneurial in his own way and encouraged us all to be our own boss, I suppose. For me, technology and technology really was an enabler that would allow you to start a business, with very little. You didn't need much capital. And I just took the opportunity. I mean, my first business was selling T-shirts, so it wasn't particularly technical, but it was using technology to do the designs, sort of digital designs and stuff. And that was the start of the journey. And so I think that, it was something that was always an important part of what we understood to be, controlling your own destiny.
Observant is a startup company in its own right that's recently been acquired. And today you really wanted to talk a lot about entrepreneurialism and is it actually a learnt skill? What brought that up for you?
I was thinking about what I wanted to talk about, and the focus of the conference here is investment, but you have to be able to match investment with an ability to execute. And, sometimes it's been my observation that people have this myth around entrepreneurialism, and in reality, it's actually a skill that you can learn. And more importantly than that, even today, there are systems and processes dedicated to making you into a better entrepreneur, teaching you what the skills are and, equipping you with the other things you need outside of passion and a good idea to succeed in growing a business.
I mean, everybody's got a good idea. Is this more about learning how to execute that or...?
Yeah, and look, I mean, some of it's cliche, right? The ideas aren't really worth much and execution's everything. But they're cliches for a reason, and that is that, it's borne out in reality. Taking an idea and executing on it is a combination of persistence but also team and, a dedication to the kind of skill that you need. I think maybe if there is one trait that's common amongst good entrepreneurs is self-awareness of their limitations. And that's where you can build your own skills or match yourself with other people who can do well what you're not so good at.
So what are some of those other skills? I mean, they can be easily learned. What are some things that people should be looking to pick up to strengthen their entrepreneurial bow?
Well, look, there are some simpler ones, and they methodologies for actually analysing the value of an opportunity, methodologies for quantifying the value that a customer attributes to solving a problem. Solving a problem is one thing, but solving a problem that's represents something particularly painful to a customer is entirely another. And from a profitability point of view, those are two very different things.
So building up that, and is it as simple as just putting the people with the right skills around you, or is that just shortcutting? You've really got to strengthen that muscle yourself.
Well, I think you can do both, and part of it comes down to the opportunity that's in front of you, the speed that you think you need to move at. I think it's always good to be on about improving yourself. I watched the Warren Buffett documentary on the plane on the way here, and you know, he's an amazing guy and someone who was a relentless self-educator. So I think my answer is both. You know, work on yourself, always work on yourself. Be aware of your own limitations as much as you can, and then match yourself with people. Because even if you could improve, maybe you don't have time right now anyway. So go find someone who does that really well and work with them closely.
And we were talking earlier about the importance of a team and the importance of building those people around you. Is that something you've seen throughout your years in this sort of world?
Yeah, not always done well myself, but I guess an opportunity like this here at the conference is to sort of reflect back. And that was a bit the theme of my talk, is to sort of look backwards and say, well, what have we not done well? Certainly being conscious about building a team is really hard, right? Because when you want to expand the team, it's probably already past the point where you needed that person and the labour market's tight. And, you know, so perhaps one thing I have observed is the times we have chosen not to move quickly and waited to find the right person, those have been the times that have worked out much better.
You spent some time in Silicon Valley. What took you over there and what did you come back a changed man?
Yeah, look, I mean, I got into technology early, both in my life, but also early from a technology point of view. And, you know, Silicon Valley really was where it all came out of. And so it had this kind of mythical place in everybody's imagination. So I was back and forward there in my early career in technology. I mean, I lived there during the original dot-com era, so the, you know, sort of late, mid to late 90s through the early 2000s. And that was, you know, I guess it was my generation's gold rush. You know, it had the absolute best and the absolute worst excesses of how markets can function. But what, you know, what was really interesting was the way the entrepreneurial system works there, the cultural sort of boiler room that people, the business people come up through, and also the venture capital industry that at that time in Silicon Valley was, you know, not even closely replicated anywhere else in the world. It's different today. There's really good all kinds of capital available in all kinds of places. But certainly understanding those things early in my career helped a lot.
What culturally do you think are some of the biggest differences between the States and Australia that makes some of those things you learn over there not necessarily easy to just plug and play?
Yeah, it's a really good question, actually, because when I first went over there, you know, America feels the same. And I think part of that is because we grow up on American culture, but Americans don't grow up on Australian culture. And, you know, the first time I landed a really bad joke in a meeting, I sort of realised, well, wait, these guys aren't quite the same as us. You know, I mean, what I love is the kind of go-getter attitude that kids learn from the youngest age, which we don't really have quite so much. But also what you do learn is that, you know, things work differently. I read a really good book recently, which I highly recommend everybody read. It's called The Culture Map by Erin Meyer. She presents a way of mapping out how cultures impact how people do business in decision-making, in communicating, in providing negative feedback. And it really helped me understand what I'd observed but not really understood. So little things, you know, like literally in the way leadership is done, in the way decisions are, you know, you get to decisions through consensus or hierarchically, the way you allocate work to people. And this applies to a lot of the cultures that we now, you know, work with on a daily basis in our globalised kind of business environment.
Is that something also to think about when we're looking at investment and starting to partner overseas?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, the my takeaway from that book was it's not obviously not just about America. You know, as we look more to China, to Southeast Asia, to our global partners everywhere, really understanding that environment you're going into, especially as you're in the early stage of your business too, you know, that can really cause you problems. These are people that you're going to be doing business with for many, many years, and bringing in an investor brings in a whole lot of other expectations, and you want to know as much about that as you can.
You know, you've recently brought in investors and sold the Observant company. What are some things that you've learned from that experience that is something that people should be mindful of when they're considering those options ahead of them?
Well, one of them, and this would apply to fundraising and a sale, is that, you know, the actual process of going through the transaction is incredibly disruptive to your business. So you really have to understand that, and you really have to have a plan for how you're going to manage your business through that transition. It's incredibly time consuming, and it takes time away from the people who really should be running the business. And secondarily is, you know, it really opens up this entire new chapter in the life of the business. So you might think you knew what was going to happen, but you can find that, you know, it turns out to be something quite different. For us, you know, incredibly exciting, but not anything that I was able to really imagine until we were part of this new enterprise.
For some people that are listening that are in probably earlier stages and are looking to you as a good news story for what you've been through, what are some things that they need to be really aware of if they're fit for investment?
People put money in because they want money out, right? And you have to absolutely understand how you're going to achieve that outcome, because as soon as you bring on professional investors, their expectation is that that investment materializes into a return, you know, in almost all circumstances. So you have to know the answer to that question. Also, I think there's a risk, and I got to this in my talk, it was something I really wanted to talk about, was you don't need to be in a rush. Just because the money's there doesn't mean it's a good idea to take it. And it will change what you have to do. It will change the way you make decisions. So if you can be profitable instead and choose when you want to take an investor, do that.
First point is working on your own profitability first, then looking at that, you know, the investors and those sort of options there. And I mean, it's not for everyone, right? Some people are probably better off sticking with a family or privately owned.
Yeah, that's true. And it's also not necessarily that everyone's going to build a global, you know, mega business. There's nothing wrong with a really successful, profitable, regionally run business. It, you know, for us, we really felt that the global opportunity was there, but the acquisition was our pathway to get the channel that we thought was an important ingredient in our overall success. But there are many businesses that are really well suited to being sustainable and profitable, you know, within a market, within a region.
I heard a lot about tech investments today, and it's really been the focus of today's forum is ag tech. A lot of new companies with great ideas that are wanting to scale quickly. Is there a rush to be first to market? Do you see that overriding some other business principles, or do you think that's a fair thing to be really concerned about, that first to market piece?
Yeah, it can be important, and there are good examples of where access to significant capital is an important ingredient to growing market, to taking hold of that first mover advantage. But, you know, like I said in the talk, first mover advantage is no good if you're walking across a minefield. So, you know, you have to know why. You have to understand the dynamics of your market to say, you know, is this a get big fast scenario, or in fact is fast follower a better approach? And both can be equally valid.
How important is it to have the founder now as the CEO in this new company? Do you see your role as guiding that transition through and taking it to the next phase?
Yeah, look, I think there are a lot of different models that work. I referred before to the kind of myth of the founder, the technical founder. There are some people, you know, to whom that just comes naturally, and they can move in a business from, you know, a very small number of people to thousands of people. That's rare. That's really rare. So I think it's probably more important to have that awareness of, you know, where you're ready to get off. And there came a point in our growth where we actually brought on somebody else from the US to be the global CEO of the company as we were growing, because I recognized in myself that wasn't my expertise. So, you know, that's kind of where I felt comfortable. I'm very comfortable in the role here in Australia because I have the support of the rest of the Jane organization around me, and, you know, the strength that brings and the cooperative nature I have with my, you know, sort of the rest of the company throughout the world.
So really the take-home message is a lot about knowing thyself, understanding yourself as an entrepreneur and the good, bad and ugly that may bring.
Yeah. And look, I said in the talk, I just turned 50, and so it's a little bit easier for me to kind of come to that realisation now. But the other point I made is this, you know, the entrepreneurialism as a skill. And this, you know, now we have these formal ideas of early stage ecosystems and methodologies. You know, a couple of weeks for you to go through these programs, actually get pushed. These weren't really available when I, you know, when I was coming up as a young entrepreneur. And I think that's the difference now, is that you can actually get access to these. You can get it online. There are programs run all throughout Australia. Get in. It doesn't really matter how good the idea is. Even if you don't think it's a particularly good idea, go through the discipline of subjecting yourself and your idea to one of these programs, and these are skills that will stay with you for your life.
Excellent. Thank you, Matthew. It's been a really interesting talk, and I think that's some great things for people to take and ponder as they encounter their own journey.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you for listening to Beating Around the Bush. If you've enjoyed the show, please head to iTunes to subscribe and leave a review. For more, visit the Rural Business Collective website at ruralbusinesscollective.com.au and join the growing tribe of small business owners and entrepreneurs making a difference in the bush.